Tune in tomorrow for a special Thanksgiving Day documentary on America's Black Farmers. Thanks for listening, and have a wonderful Thanksgiving. In Washington, D.C., I'm Leanne Caldwell.
And you're listening to radio station WBAI New York. The time is 7 o'clock. Time once again for Off the Hook.
The telephone keeps ringing, so I ripped it off the wall. I cut myself while shaving, now I can't make a call. We couldn't get much worse.
Good evening, everybody. The program is Off the Hook. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you on this opt-out day, Wednesday, the 24th of November, year 2010. Joined tonight by Mike.
Hi.
Dotret.
Hello.
Voltaire.
Heck the planet.
Rob T. Firefly.
Good evening.
Jim.
Hi.
Bernie S. down in Philadelphia, I believe.
Greetings from Philadelphia.
And we have two guests joining us tonight. Mitch Altman, I believe, out there in California.
Yeah, I'm actually at home.
All right, that's a rarity. And GMC joins us from Holland, although he's here in New York.
Hello.
Wow, we have a packed house tonight. Not usually the case, the day before Thanksgiving, but a lot going on. Well, Mitch, let's start with you. You just got back from Japan, I believe. Some kind of hacker extravaganza going on out there.
Yeah, I went there with Hackers on a Plane, and we saw hacker spaces there and the Tokyo Maker Faire and bunch of Japan cultural places shown around by local geeks everywhere we went.
Awesome. Was this your first time in Japan?
Oh, I've actually been there a bunch of times. I lived in Tokyo for 3 months back in the early 90s doing work.
Uh-huh. So what has changed as far as the hacker scene in the times you've been there?
Oh, man. You know, it's changed a lot. And the last time I was there was a year and a half ago. I was flown out there for the Tokyo Maker Faire in May a year ago. There's been, you know, Japan culturally is kind of a place where people do things individually if they do their hobby. Like there's enough hobbyists in Japan to support a whole area of just electronics, Akihabara. But people getting together to do something is really a difficult thing for people in Japanese culture, but that's starting to change. At the Tokyo Maker Faire a year and a half ago, there were a lot of individuals showing a bunch of really interesting things. And this year, there were a lot of people like that as well, but there was also a lot of people that have gotten together in groups to do some really sophisticated things that couldn't have been done just individually. And now there are four hackerspaces in Japan where a year and a half ago there was one that just started. So I think things are poised to really take off as far as the hacker scene goes in Japan now, which I think will help Japanese society as a whole.
So tell us how many people from the States took part in this, and what was your agenda for the most part, your itinerary?
Yeah, so there were 10 of us from around the world, people from Belgium, Vietnam, Australia, and the United States. and it was put together by Hackers on a Plane. Nick Farr has been organizing these for a while to try to bring hackers together from around the planet to collaborate and move the whole scene forward, and it's been amazing what he's done. And this trip, I think, really helped a lot of Japanese hackers realize that they're not alone. So that was part of our agenda, to push that and also to do a fundraiser for the Tokyo Hackerspace. They have about maybe half the number of members they need to break even at this point, and we did a fundraiser day for them. I did a workshop where a whole bunch of people came who wouldn't have otherwise. We had an auction that raised a lot of money with a bunch of things that people donated of hacker interest. And then we had a dinner and a party. So altogether, we raised over 130,000 yen, which I think is over $1,500. And
yeah, you had me standing up for a second there. Wow, that was awesome. But that's good too. That's really good.
Yeah. So yeah, it was a lot of fun. It got a lot of attention around Japan. Got a lot of buzz. I got national TV coverage while I was at the Maker Faire. Interviewed by TV. I just love it that someone who turns off TVs for a living gets interviewed on TV a lot. But that got good coverage and mentioned for the hackerspace as well.
A question for you, Mitch. I assume you watch yourself on TV after you've been interviewed. Do you get really enraged if somebody turns it off in the middle of that?
Oh, no, I encourage it.
Okay, all right, I'll remember that.
Yeah, please do. So actually, the only way I watch it is if someone sends me a link and it happens to be on YouTube, which is the case this time. If you're interested, do a search for Tokyo MX, Mary X-Ray, on YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
So, we went to a bunch of places around Tokyo and a bunch of places around Osaka.
Mm-hmm.
And there was going to Hiroshima. Even though I'd been to Japan a bunch, it was the first time I went there. And, wow, talk about emotionally powerful. One of the things that's really interesting there's just one of these little statues with a red bib that survived the blast right at ground zero, a few meters away. It just happened to be right under it, so it survived. And there's shadow of the blast still there, and just, for some reason, that's just this very peaceful little statue sitting there in the midst of all that chaos. And then there were a bunch of Japanese school kids. Every time they saw a foreigner, they'd come up and ask us to write a message of peace on these sheets that they have. And, it was really wonderful that this is, people have taken something so tremendously awful and turned it into a place of hope.
Wow. Well, I hope we can learn something from that and do similar such things, maybe in places around here as well. So it sounds like an awesome time, a very educational and inspiring to many people. Hopefully do similar things like that in years to come in other parts of the world. And I'd certainly like to see what's going on over there as far as hackerspaces. But on the subject, GMC here from Holland has been touring the United States, visiting all number of hackerspaces, an incredible number. Have you counted how many you've actually seen?
Someone asked me how many I visited, but that's a while ago. Then it was 15, so I think I must be on 20, 25 or something. Actually, more than I've ever visited in Europe in total. So,
uh-huh. Yeah. And you've basically done the West Coast. You drove all the way across the country.
Yep.
Chicago, Detroit, Chicago, Boston, and now New York.
And now I'm in New York, yeah.
And it's not over yet.
No, I've got two more weeks. I'm going to go down to Washington, D.C. and some places in between, and then finally end in Miami, where there's also a space, apparently.
Wow.
Yeah.
That is something. Are there any in particular that stand out, memorable places?
What I especially liked were the smaller hackerspaces. There was one in Portland, Brain Silo. That was a really great space with a really fun group. I also liked LA a lot. There's a hackerspace there, Null Space Labs, and they are really good at electronics. We walked in there, and well, before we knew it, they had this soldering SMD electronics, and we had the blinking LEDs, and that was really cool.
Mm-hmm.
That was one that really stood out. And actually, what I'm seeing is that it's mostly the smaller towns, the smaller cities, where there's the most community around the hackerspaces somehow. So that's something I've been noticing.
You're involved in a hackerspace called, I believe, RevSpace.
Correct,
The Hague in the Netherlands. Tell us something about how that came about.
Well, as you know, I've been involved with Hacking at Random, HARD 2009, the event last year in the Netherlands.
Mm-hmm. One of the co-coordinators, I believe.
Sorry?
One of the co-coordinators, I believe.
Right, we're one of the prime suspects, yeah, and uh-huh. We're already planning for the next one. But so when that was done, I basically fell in sort of a black hole, and I thought, well, wouldn't it be cool to have something like HARD, but then every day where I could go? So I just started the hackerspace and asked people in my town.
You just started the how do you just start a hackerspace? What's involved?
Oh, it's really simple. You come up with a name, you email people you know that are interested in like electronics, hacking, computer, IT, sec, whatever. And well, somehow they show up at the first meeting and you make plans. And before you know it, you have a space and things kick off. And basically, it's like hard. Things start to happen once you do the first step.
Mm-hmm. Is that what you found happened in places around the States where people just started hackerspaces pretty much the same way you did?
Oh, definitely, yeah. It's basically you need two or three people who, well, think it's a good idea and that will attract other people. Mm-hmm. And before you know it starts rolling. That's now, a general pattern.
As far as expense, though, because that's always the primary issue for most people, how do you get over that hurdle, paying the rent, finding the space in the first place, whatever other expenses come up?
Oh, there's a lot of ways to go about that. Sometimes the building is owned by one of the co-conspirators, so to say.
That's handy. The building's owned already by
exactly,
one of you.
Exactly, yeah. They have, like in Las Vegas, it was a really cool group. They just start a hackerspace within their garage, which is a great space, and they already had a lot of equipment. And that's a nice stepping stone, so to say. Once you have a space, members will come and... At some point, the garage will be too small, but then that means there's membership dues that you can use to actually rent something, and so you can expand that.
Mm-hmm.
That's one way. Another way is to get a building for free, which is what I did in The Hague.
You can do things like that in Holland. You can just get a building for free, and you can just plop yourself someplace, and all these nice things keep happening. Here in the States, it doesn't work that way, okay? You get all kinds of penalties, and you're encouraged not to do certain things like this. I would love to have a building for free. That would be great. So if anybody out there has buildings to give us, we'll start all kinds of hackerspaces and better things, too.
Email oth@2600.com.
Yes. Let us know the dimensions of your building and where it is and how to get there, and we'll scope it out.
What's better than hackerspace?
Radio stations. Radio stations and hackerspaces.
You can combine them.
Yeah, that's you can have a radio station. Yeah.
A big Lego room where you can build all kinds of things.
All this is possible in a hackerspace.
Something actually, like rocket ships, we could do some experimentation with those.
We've done it.
Yeah, those cars that you drive with radio remote things and those helicopters that you can use to spy on people now.
What about a play pit with like...
Sorry?
A play pit like at Chuck E. Cheese's.
You can have one of those too, Voltaire. Yes, I promise. all sorts of things. So you get buildings given to you in Holland. And
We are lending it from the city. It's a long story, but...
I mean, they're lending it to you.
At some point,
The city says, have this building for a particular amount of time, and you can actually...
They wanted to tear it down, but the economy went down, so all the plans for the area that we are in were put on hold. Uh-huh. So they have a lot of empty property there, and empty property attracts problems,
this isn't a case where it was a squat. You didn't just move in and refuse to leave. They actually gave it to you.
We have a contract and everything. That's but at things like that, I mean, maybe not in New York. If you look at Buffalo, also in New York, state of New York.
Well, every building is vacant in Buffalo.
Exactly. So
no, I'm kidding.
No, but it's true.
Buffalonians are going to be writing in now. Actually, but you got to admit, there are a lot of vacant buildings in Buffalo. And Detroit.
Yeah.
You've been to Detroit, right?
Yeah.
What do you think of that city? That's
I
know we have listeners in Detroit, and they're great listeners. But boy, you know, that city, I think we can all agree, could use some sprucing up and some new life
interesting.
Injected.
But the good thing is that the hackerspace gets a lot of cool equipment for free or for really cheap.
I can't imagine just dumpster diving in that city alone. You'll probably find all sorts of things.
Yes, my great aunt, my mom inherited her house in Buffalo, and instead of paying to getting money for selling it, she had to pay somebody to buy it.
She had to Wait, well, that doesn't make any
sense.
She
had to give it away for free, but with legal fees and everything, it came to like $1,600 to
really?
Get it off her hands. Yeah.
Why didn't the person who was getting it for free pay the
because
fee?
They were supposed to pay rent, but they were not even paying the rent.
Welcome to America. All right.
It's the rest belt.
That's how things work here. Okay, so today is opt-out day. Do we all know what that means?
No.
Do we know
yes.
what that means? You,
yes.
James, you don't know
no,
what that means?
No, I'm not
basically, we have this wonderful organization known as the TSA.
Oh.
It's part of a bigger government that Bush made with Homeland Security and TSA and all that. He basically expanded government beyond belief.
Wait, I thought the Republicans were the party of smaller
government.
Republicans
do it all the time.
I can't keep track
of these
people.
And this is a perfect example. If Republicans want to get rid of big government, start with Homeland Security and TSA.
And gay rights.
That's not a government department.
No, but they wanted to like remove gay rights, and they said they're for small government.
We'll get into that
anyway.
In another show at another time. But today was the day when people were basically going to refuse to go through the new backscatter X-ray machines that are supposed to see you naked so that TSA people in other rooms can get their jollies or whatever. And what you're supposed to do, or what you were supposed to do, was simply say, no, I'd rather not go through that. I'd rather go for the invasive groping instead, which the TSA has given as an alternative. Now, I've talked to a number of people today who have been traveling, that is, outbound. I know, Mike, you arrived today from Europe.
Yes.
And you made a comment before, which I think is worth repeating.
Well, I would just like to report that it is easier to get through airport security than to get into the building where WBI is hosted.
Yeah, somehow none of us were on the list tonight, and we had quite a time getting into the building, but you had an easier time getting through security. And
yeah,
I was
through it in like 15 minutes. I got to the airport 2 hours early because I'm like, I'm flying to the United States. It's the day before Thanksgiving. It's going to be terrible, and I was through it in 15 minutes.
Now, I had a friend who went to Costa Rica today from JFK, where they were doing all the groping. And I know that sounds horrible, but it's true. And he basically arrived very early and reported that there were three people in front of him in line. Everybody was very polite. There were no backscatter machines anywhere and no groping. And he had 4 hours to kill at the airport as a result.
Well, I don't know why you got there that early. But
because of the media. Because what the media has been saying that it's going to be madness. And, you know, it can be madness, certainly, if they implement silly security schemes like this.
Yeah, I flew out of JFK not that long ago to get to the place where I flew back from today. And there were no X-ray naked scanners
well,
in sight either.
Obviously, not every airline is going to have them. Not every terminal is going to have the same machines. It would be nice, actually, if we reported where the machines were, and then people could book their airline tickets based on what kind of security they prefer to go through. That would
well,
be kind of nice.
Well, they're not at least presently in terminals 2 and 3 at JFK.
All right, we can report that. Terminals 2 and 3, you heard it here. Whatever airlines fly out of there, if you don't want to deal with backscatter, or if you want to pack something into your underwear, apparently. Someone clear this up for me, please. The underwear bomber of December 25th, 2009, packed explosives into his underwear. Are we saying there's no way to detect that with current security measures?
Yes, that's true.
You can stick explosives somewhere and nothing
will
detect it.
What he did is he filled a cylinder and put it in his crotch, filled with PETN, which is a plastic explosive. And these X-ray scanning machines cannot detect PETN plastique. They do have in some of the airport they have these sniffer things. I mean, they don't sniff your crotch. They they take like if they think some of your luggage has explosives, they'll you've seen them do that. They rub a swab across it and they put the swab into this sensor machine, which like a dosimeter or something, I don't know, it's just mass spectrometer, and it sees if you have any traces of explosives or whatever. But if you're wearing them in your body, there's no way to test this, nor is there any way to test this if it's inserted into a body orifice, which was done in Saudi Arabia recently to blow up somebody. So this is all security theater. It's really pointless.
Couldn't I hide something in my socks just as easily? They don't grope your feet, do they?
You know, they run. Yeah, they put their fingers around your ankles and move all the way up to your crotch. So
yeah, but I'm saying the soles of my feet. What if I had all the explosives there? Couldn't that get?
Oh, they take your when you have to take your shoes off.
Yeah, but not my socks. That's my point. I'm not trying to give ideas to people. I'm just saying this is ineffectual if this is what they're going for.
A good point. It's a good place to hide stuff is in your socks.
Oh boy, I didn't mean it to come out like that. But all right, Voltaire.
What if you have a prosthetic foot?
Well, people do have prosthetic feet and all kinds of other things, and they apparently are being forced to take them off and have them inspected and all manner of things like that. There are a number of challenges, of course, going on with this. I know Electronic Privacy Information Center is fighting this kind of thing. Bernie, do you know something more about what they're doing?
Yeah, several weeks ago, actually a few months ago, Epic, Mark Ruttenberg's outfit, Electronic Privacy Information Center, they sued TSA on various grounds, including it violates people's Fourth Amendment rights to be scanned by these X-ray machines, which basically provide the government with an image of your naked body under your clothes. And they were able to obtain the specifications of these machines. And it indicates that these machines are have a built-in feature that allows the image data to be stored and exported. Yet, despite that, this morning, TSA Director John Pistole, that's right, it's spelled P-I-S-T-O-L, pronounced like pistol.
That's really his name. His name is Pistole.
Yeah, you better not utter the director of the TSA's last name at an airport check-in, because handcuffed. But anyway, he said on Good Morning America this morning, he said these scanners are not capable of storing images or transmitting the images. And then during the same interview, he said the images are deleted once the TSA officer determines the passenger
deleted
is not
from
a threat.
Where? For his imagination? It had to be stored someplace to be deleted.
Exactly. Both statements can't be true. The TSA, I think, is lying to the public to mollify our legitimate privacy concerns. They can't even get their story straight.
Never trust a guy named Pistol. That's what I get out of this.
What a pistol he is.
We actually had that in the Netherlands as well. We've been having these scanners for a while already. And in the beginning they said, well, we are not storing any images. But then it turned out they are. And so there's a big database with all kinds of naked images.
How did people react to that in the Netherlands?
Surprisingly, there wasn't a lot of uproar, actually. That's strange.
But same here. A lot of people say, oh, it's worth it for the price of security. And I have to wonder, at what point do they say, no, this is going too far?
I disagree. This has been like the whiniest response I've heard out of Americans in a long time.
Well, I'm quoting the polls that if you ask people at airports, the majority of people apparently say, oh, it's no problem. I have nothing to hide, apparently.
That's because it depends on how you phrase that question. If you say, if you phrase it as enhanced pat-downs, then people are fine with it because they think that that's just what they've been doing before. But if you phrase it as actual groping where they actually touch your junk, then they're not okay with it.
Interesting. Dot red.
Yeah, but, you know, with all this going on, I think that's kind of what they're expecting. I mean, yeah, Mike says this is a pretty whiny response we've gotten, but, you know, so far there hasn't been outrage over it. I think they're hoping that, like elsewhere, it's just going to people are just going to take it, and then they'll just be told later that we're doing things we didn't tell you about, that we lied to you about, but it's okay.
Again, I disagree. I've heard far more outrage over this, which is bad, than I've heard over far more egregious things. So.
Yeah, we were talking about this recently, where it just seems that it's because people are being touched in private parts that everyone is outraged about this, and they'll let the First Amendment things go a lot easier, and that's unfortunate.
I think it's actually because this really directly affects people with the means to fly, which is a different class of people than the government usually focuses its nastiness on.
Well, then that leads me to my next point. How come we're just limiting this to airplanes? What about trains? What about buses? What about schools? What about churches? People can blow themselves up there as well, and isn't that just as bad?
Schools, but schools already have a lot of these features. You know, a lot of these things you're talking about, I've already was going through in high school every day. You know, going through metal detectors and getting pulled aside by somebody, having my shoes taken off, my belt taken. Well, actually, just like the belt off before
did
you go
through
the X-ray.
Was there groping involved?
They tried not to touch you because everyone there are minors, but they would get as close as they possibly could with, you know, various implements. It was very interesting.
GMC.
Well, I haven't actually taken a train in America, but when I was in Toronto in Canada, the station looked a lot like an airport, actually. There were lines where you had to check in and gates where you had to go through. So maybe, I don't know.
Now, you're touring the U.S. and you went to Canada and you came back to the U.S. As a Dutch citizen. Did you have any trouble doing that?
Actually, no. Well, they went through my stuff, but that's all, actually.
So how come you, a foreign citizen, has less trouble getting into this country than I do, and I live here?
I heard the story. Yeah,
I don't understand that. Yes, Mitch.
Yeah, so in Japan, while I was there, APEC was going on, and all of the train stations had notices everywhere and announcements saying that we were on heightened security level high, which sounds to me a lot like threat level orange here.
Heightened level high.
Yeah.
I like the sound of that.
And they have those in red letters. So APEC going on, they decided there had to be high security. After APEC was totally over, they kept the signs up and all the police around with huge sticks. I guess they don't carry guns there. The police don't carry guns. But huge sticks. And they stand on these high stools politely and look sort of threatening. But after it was all over, they kept all the signs up and all the police with their big sticks, but they didn't say any reason now. They just said we're at a heightened security level high. So just like in the United States, every time I've ever been to an airport, and I've been to a lot of them, it's always at a security threat level orange.
Uh-huh.
And I don't know anyone who's ever heard of a different threat level color. It's just part of the game.
It's mission creep where they say it's only temporary, then they keep it.
Yeah, that's pretty much the modus operandi of most governments, I think.
So I took a train in Spain last week, and they have a big, really large, actually, x-ray scanner that you have to put your luggage through, but there's no metal detector, so you can carry anything you want on your person. It seems very half-baked, and they only have these scanners in the major stations. You can board the same train in a smaller station without even the x-ray. I don't really know what they're thinking.
They're making theater.
Yeah, they certainly are. Okay, I'd like to actually address Mike's point about the whiny response and have some more whining here, because there is a lot of backlash against this. But in the interest of equal time, I'd like to give some airtime to our conservative friends who are also outraged by this and hear what they have to say. This is an important angle to look at. All caps. This is happening. This is from my conservative action alert that I get on a regular basis. This is happening right now in the United States of America. Men, women, and children at U.S. airports are being fondled, groped, and humiliated by TSA agents working under the direction of our government. I know you may be packing right now to head out to see family for Thanksgiving. Maybe you are taking a break from getting the house ready for guests. Whether you are traveling or staying at home, please take a moment to read this and let all of your loved ones know what is going on at our nation's airports. Quite simply, our freedoms are slipping away. Little boys and girls are crying. Mentally ill passengers are confused. Parents are outraged. And grandmothers are being touched in ways they never could have imagined. And the only crime they have committed is... it's not funny. The only crime they have committed is having a need to board an airplane. If you have been reading the news or watching television at all over the past few days, certainly you've seen some disturbing footage of TSA agents employing state-sanctioned assault against American citizens. There's a special button for you to click to blast faxes to Congress telling them to stop the random, useless, and unconstitutional abuse of American flyers. And there are some examples here that I've heard in the mainstream media. A woman is forced to drink breast milk to prove it isn't dangerous. A man is left shaking and covered in urine after an agent broke his urostomy bag during an aggressive pat-down. A breast cancer survivor is forced to remove both prosthetic breasts for inspection. An ABC News employee is demeaned as an agent feels around in her underwear. A small child screams, "Don't touch me," and cries while an agent frisks him and his father stands around helpless. I've heard many of these examples right here on these airwaves on various other programs. However, it continues. Whether or not our government wants to admit it, most terrorists are Middle Eastern males between the ages of 18 and 35. They are likely to have a paper trail and travel back and forth to countries that sponsor terrorists, using intelligence to find out information about a passenger before they get to the airport, and employing behavioral profiling techniques like they do in Israel would be more effective than harassing legitimate American travelers. Instead, the Obama administration, his incompetent Homeland Security Secretary Janet Napolitano, and clueless thug John Pistol of the Transportation Safety Administration are pretending there is no U.S. Constitution and trampling all over the rights of American citizens. So as you see, what's happened here is it's been turned into a political issue against the Obama administration, where you know the same exact things would have been happening, if not worse, under the Bush administration. What do you guys think of a lot of hands raised? Rob?
Yeah, excuse me. Can I assume that the same sort of messages were going around 4 years ago when it was their guy in charge and, like, the same stuff was happening?
I've been having trouble tracking those down. I'm sure these people would not simply have a partisan attack against only one side, and they you know, against this no matter who was doing it. Voltaire.
Yep, and the conservatives that are pushing this issue are they're as you can see in the articles, the hidden agenda is to institute racial profiling.
Well, I mean, I've heard this said by lots of people from all different political spectrums that look who the terrorists are, just profile these people and subject them to the intensive searches and the invasive searches. I've even heard liberals say this kind of a thing. Mike, you have a response?
But it doesn't even work because you can have people of any ethnicity with crazy ideology. Timothy McVeigh is a great example,
exactly.
Or a terrible example. And so it doesn't work.
How do you catch Timothy McVeigh? How do you catch people who kill abortion doctors? How do you catch all manner of terrorists who don't fit that description? Yeah,
the underwear bomber was not a Middle Easterner.
Mm-hmm. It's from the Sudan or something. What was it? Nigeria?
Kenya.
It was definitely not.
He was the son of a Nigerian banker. Maybe we should profile it for that. But
yeah, so profiling, you know, if profiling did work and you were a terrorist, don't you think maybe you'd start changing the profile a little bit so that you would catch them unawares?
Also,
it's not hard to do.
The conservatives that are peddling this, that are making an issue out of this, are forgetting that the head of the lobbyists, the chief lobbyist for the company that sells these machines is Michael Chertoff, who is the head of Homeland Security.
No, just to respond to Voltaire's statement of ulterior motives, is I don't think it's necessarily, you know, the people trying to use this situation as a way to create rage against, you know, say, Obama administration. There's something happening that annoys a lot of people, and different groups are looking at it from their particular perspective.
You have
conservative people that are not going to like Obama, but you're going to have liberal people that don't like what's happening as well.
Speaking of liberals, will do just about anything to distract you from the truth. They want to avoid upsetting Muslims and live in a politically correct world, but they have no problem putting their hands down women's pants, scaring little children, or fondling grandparents. it's just insanely funny, I think, to see how they're attacking something that's a very basic, something to be objecting to. I don't know what the actual word for it is. But, it's being used for very partisan purposes. Bernie, what do you think?
I think there's an opportunity here for all travelers to send a message to the TSA. I did a little bit of research. X-rays do not penetrate lead, and I found that for $3.99, you can get a roll of adhesive foil lead tape that's half inch wide, and you could form that into alphanumeric character strings, and tape them inside your laptop bag, inside your lining of your clothing, or whatever. So when you go through the X-ray scanner, you will be like a billboard. And you can send messages to the TSA. And if enough of us do this, we'll be playing our part in this security theater.
Well, if enough of us do this, but do you really want to be walking through as a billboard? Get enough undue attention as it is.
Well, you know, we have to play along with the theater. I think we should send messages that way. It's not illegal to put messages in there, but it's going to give pause. I think it would be fun. If anybody wants to know where to get this lead tape, you can email us at oth@2600.com for $3.99.
Let me respond to that with another story that happened fairly recently. You might have heard about this. There was this prank at Washington State University where basically a bunch of students and information technology staff members were given another reason to remember the 5th of November. Students and instructors arriving for class on a Friday morning were greeted by a video message automatically beamed onto projector screens in more than 24 classrooms. The message was delivered by a hacker dressed up as V, the Guy Fawkes-inspired anti-hero of the 2006 movie V for Vendetta, and of course real life. After hacking into the university's academic media system, which manages classroom presentation and distance learning technology, I love it. The as-of-yet unidentified culprit or culprits programmed motorized screens to unfurl themselves and schedule projectors to broadcast the 5-minute-long video once every hour. The video ostensibly a diatribe against campus squirrels and a call to end student apathy interrupted lectures and cut off access for distance learning students until the IT staff was able to shut down the program in the early afternoon. They say traditional methods of shutting down the software would not work. Now, they were afraid that the video was a precursor to a larger system breach or even Guy Fawkes-esque violence. Campus officials responded immediately to the hack. They said the infected media system was not attached to databases of students' personal or financial information, and the threat to the larger university system was, quote unquote, not very serious. And although the video did not appear to be threatening terrorist action, the administration had to consider all the possibilities. Now, listen to this. Listen to this quote by one of the administrators. They say the investigation is still ongoing. The responsible parties could face, quote, serious charges, unquote, for their prank. Here's the quote. Childish pranks just don't have a place anymore. What may have been seen as cute and clever years ago really doesn't get that kind of reaction today. Really? There's no place for childish pranks anymore? Have we become that kind of a society where we have no sense of humor? And because some of us have the wits scared out of us on a daily basis, we can't do anything that's even remotely prankish or fun or silly, Rob?
If there's no longer a place for cute and clever, then really, who's won?
Not the cute and clever people, that's for sure. Voltaire.
Whoever said that quote in the article deserves a pieing.
You know, that would be perfect. Yeah. Do people still... you'd probably be arrested as a terrorist if you pie somebody these days.
They pied Thomas Friedman a couple years ago, and that was pretty funny.
You know, I met Pie Man not too long ago. He's the guy that actually... I don't know why there was only one guy, but he was the guy back in the 60s that used to pie politicians and all kinds of people.
Was he the one that pied Bill Gates?
I don't know if he did. He might have been retired by the time that happened. Well, not right.
This statement reminds me of the reports we've been getting that... people who oppose this sort of stuff are getting flagged on Department of Homeland Security lists as disruptors and whatnot.
What's the term, Bernie? Some new term they've come up with.
Oh, I read it. I'm trying to remember it. It was something like...
Domestic extremists.
Domestic extremists.
Domestic extremists, yes. We're new labels. We're probably all on that list, by the way.
By the definition, all of us here would be considered these domestic extremists because anyone who advocates or disrupts these enhanced security feed...
But I want to consider myself more than just a domestic extremist. Is there a way to expand that to be just a global extremist, perhaps?
You technically are domestic and a foreigner at the same time, so who knows?
Okay, I can live with that. Mike?
As an extremist, I'm just curious if there's more than one source for this story. It seems to have appeared in this publication no one ever heard of before.
That's why I say alleged in reports.
You're talking about you're not talking about the Guy Fawkes stuff. You're talking
no, the Guy Fawkes I'm convinced about, but the extremist.
Uh-huh. Well, I guess we can Google the name and see if how many other places, not just quoting that story, pop up. And maybe it's fiction. Maybe it's simply another childish prank, which there's no place for, folks. No place.
We just love being afraid nowadays. That's much more fun than childish pranks.
Well, fear is profit. You know, if you get people to be afraid, you can get people to pay lots of money to not be afraid. Of course, it never actually works, and then they keep paying more.
Isn't there a special word for the type of person who tries to get other people to be afraid? It's in the news a lot.
Politician, I thought.
Terrorist.
That's the one.
Oh, wow.
Good.
Never thought of that. Okay, well, we have, sticking with conservatives just for a little while, this is something else that I think is just fun. A listener sent this in. This comes from Guppy. I listened to the podcast of your show from November the 10th. In the segment where you talked about net neutrality and the recent election defeats for all the candidates who are net neutrality advocates, yes, not one candidate running who was in favor of net neutrality won. Not one. I wonder who is left in Congress who is a friend to net neutrality. Not all seats of Congress are up for grabs each election. So, yeah, there are probably a few people left there that might dare to say something good about net neutrality. While the defeats in the recent election are certainly bad for net neutrality, this week's show made it sound like there is now zero support in Congress for net neutrality as a result of the election. I hope that's overstating the case, but I'd really like to know who's left in office who is on our side of this issue. Does anybody, Voltaire, do you have the facts on this?
There are quite a few people, actually.
By quite a few, do you mean the majority?
Three out of the five FCC commissioners are...
Yeah, but they're not in Congress.
The entire Progressive Caucus at the... The House, which is...
How
like
big is the Progressive Caucus in our government?
They have like 65 members now, even after the election.
Well, I don't think it's big enough.
It's not big enough. But let me continue with this. The FCC has to do the stuff.
Let me continue with this letter. I agree with the sentiment that was expressed on the show that most voters don't know what net neutrality is and as a result don't care about it. Somebody like to, in several sentences, Bernie, how about you? You're elected. Describe what net neutrality is. Several sentences, remember.
I don't think I could do it. It would be difficult. You gave a really good explanation the other show a couple 3 weeks ago. Can you just repeat that?
I want to give somebody else a chance.
You did a better job than I could, frankly.
Dotright, how about you?
All right, fine. Basically, companies who... I'm sorry. ISPs.
It's not so easy, is it? Yeah.
are, well, but basically you have ISPs and whatnot. They send, you know, they're like the infrastructure for sending your stuff around, and they can charge people to
they can charge you a premium rate, yes, to go to certain places, and, or not charge you a premium rate to go to other places, and basically give unfair advantages.
Premium, they can, people who don't pay these premiums could in theory have their traffic sidelined. So you could be a subscriber of, say, Time Warner, and Time Warner has issues with some other company, and then all of a sudden you can't get on any websites that maybe use this other company as an ISP.
Mm-hmm.
You know, something horrible like that. And unless the traffic is not biased, is neutral, which is what net neutrality is about, there are fears that the internet will not be very cohesive anymore.
Would you say net neutrality is the same thing as communism?
No.
No? All right. Well, we're gonna prove you wrong here. The misinformation campaign equates net neutrality not only with communism and socialism and all that kind of thing, but with the old FCC fairness doctrine, which this reader says, I'm sure most people remember, was an old policy for broadcast mass media, which said that television and radio should try to provide equal time for opposing viewpoints. Of course, this is not what net neutrality is about, but most conservatives oppose the fairness doctrine, and thus ill-informed conservative-leaning voters tend to oppose net neutrality. I'd like to play a video, some audio from the video that this listener sent us about basically the equating of net neutrality with the fairness doctrine and all sorts of other nasty things. Take a listen to this and how this particular correspondent views the liberal point of view. From Pajama TV, this is what this is called. And it's loading now. Okay, we can't hear it for some reason. Let's try this one.
Some conservatives are arguing that the beginning of the Obama era has been a disaster. They argue that the president's soft approach to tyrants over elicited predictable displays of aggression, boding far worse to come. They feel the president's high-blown ethical rhetoric has given way to his appointments of political hacks. And, of course, there's the gazillion dollars in spending and taxation that conservatives feel is a radical attempt to destroy our free market system. That's the conservative argument. But today I'd like to explain the liberal argument. Shut up. Shut up is the central rationale behind the leftist program. We've heard it expanded upon recently by Democrat bigwigs who want to bring back some version of the misnamed fairness doctrine to try to knock guys like Rush Limbaugh and Sean Hannity off the air. See, Rush and Sean argue forcefully against liberal policies, and Democrats want to explain to them, shut up. A book called A Manifesto for Media Freedom by my City Journal pal Brian C. Anderson and Adam D. Therer describes how high-level Dems also support a plan with another Orwellian name, net neutrality it's called, that would try to force conservatives to shut up online as well. But even if the left can't turn shut up into law, they've worked hard over the years to make it the custom of the country. It's the essence of politically correct phraseology and university speech codes, say it our way or shut up. It's inherent in the media's demonization of conservative commentators, the way they try to turn names like Limbaugh and Ann Coulter into bywords for intolerance so they'll just shut up. And why were there more than half a dozen movies attacking the war on terror and not one in support of it? Oh, wait, I know. Shut up. The left here has been making the shut up argument at least since the 70s, when it became clear that all their other arguments had failed. Since it was the only argument remaining to them, they had to invent different ways to say it. If you pointed out that their weakness allowed the murderous tyranny of communism to expand, for instance, well, you were a McCarthyite. Shut up. If you proved that their leniency toward criminals turned our cities into cesspools, you were a fascist. Shut up. When you pointed out that their welfare policies destroyed black families and created a social disaster of vast proportions, you were a racist, a sexist, uncivil, worse than Hitler. All just different ways of saying, shut up. All around the world, as leftism has failed everywhere, shut-uppery has been called to its defense. The full-blown leftists, the communists, say shut up with prisons and guns. But Western leftists, laboring under traditions of freedom, are subtler. In Europe, they've had more than 50 years of the sort of soft socialism the Democrats are now bringing here. Their anti-individualist, anti-religious, and anti-patriotic policies have so sapped the energies of the European nations that the continent's once great cultures are now flaccid and passive, fit for nothing but to be conquered in slow motion by the violent, intolerant Islamist invader within. But when people like Ayaan Hirsi Ali, Geert Wilders, or Oriana Fallaci have the temerity to decry the left's empowerment of Islamist hatefulness, they're the ones brought up on charges of being hateful, not because they're speaking falsely, mind you, but because, shut up. So now, the left is in charge of America, and shut up is on the march. Watch for that fairness doctrine. Beware of net neutrality. Pay attention to the ways the liberal mainstream news media distort, mock, insult, and exclude the conservative opposition. Listen to the people they don't want you to listen to. And whatever you do, don't shut up. This is Andrew Klavan on The Culture.
Ah, shut up. No, I mean, I think it's good that we heard the whole thing through, but it's incredible to me that they're actually serious, making net neutrality out to be so evil with this particular ideology. Rob?
Yeah, I'd just like to ask, what in the blue hell did any of that have to do with net neutrality?
Absolutely nothing. And when they showed net neutrality on the screen, there was a slogan that said, all bits are created equal. Why is that a bad thing? All bits are created equal. I think that's something that... it doesn't make any sense. I don't get it.
I think it's great that you actually...
I'm sorry, dot right then, Mitch.
All right, I think it's great you actually play that because it actually demonstrates the argument that's been made against net neutrality very well. Instead of just talking about it, listeners can listen to that. What it basically is doing is instead of actually creating a logical argument, they're just simply attaching it to something else that people have a negative feeling about and then making an emotional argument. When in reality, net neutrality is the exact opposite of telling people to shut up. It's saying, let me speak.
Exactly, yeah. How is it that it's stifling Rush Limbaugh or
Sean Hannity? If net neutrality was actually defeated, then you could, in theory, have ISPs say, you know what, we don't want to have Rush Limbaugh's content streamed over, so we're going to block Fox. You know, or just at least, you know, give it a lower precedence.
Okay, Mitch, then Voltaire, then our phone calls, 212-209-2900. Go ahead, Mitch.
Yeah, I'm just wondering, you know, like, clearly this person is not coming from a place of sincerity. It's just cynicism on his own part to try to get his own programs through. But, like, how many people actually believe what this guy is spouting? It just doesn't seem like if anyone has any shred of ability to think for themselves, they would just have the same response that we all just had.
Yeah, the guy is just insane, like saying that black welfare programs are bad for black families, or saying that socialism has made Europeans flaccid. Like, I've been with plenty of European guys, and they're anything but flaccid.
Well, you're sitting next to one right now, and I'm sure you two can discuss that later.
No,
but basically, yeah, it's using a lot of linchpins to kind of get people riled up about something. They just throw that in. They could say strawberry ice cream and get you riled up against that. It's just basically, I don't think this guy understood anything about what it was he was talking about. Klavan on the Culture is the name of the program. It's Klavan, and you know, this is proof that we don't tell you to shut up. We want to hear what you have to say, and you know, we want to let you sink yourself with your own logic.
Although, we played the whole thing.
We did play the whole thing. I'm sure he has a lot more to say as well.
Yeah, but so, I would like to pie this guy.
Well, maybe we can get Pie Man out of retirement to pie him as well. Mike?
One thing that I would like them to stop was that weird sound effect they kept using. If they could shut that up, I'd be happy.
Well, they were playing films in the background, and they were using a film projector sound effect, and it's not very good to have the audio of other people speaking while you're speaking. It kind of gets in the way of things.
But then they said shut up, and it all stopped.
Yeah, he told them to shut up. He was the only one saying shut up there. GMC.
Well, I'm not from around the country, so I have to ask.
But you were attacked in this video just as much as anybody else.
Yes, but I have to ask this. Are there people who take this serious?
Yes.
There are. Okay.
Oh, my God. You just traveled across the country. I mean, did you not see them? They're all over the place.
I did not meet them, no. Well, they're not in the hackerspaces, apparently.
No, they're not in the hackerspaces. You have to go to the malls and various other places. Oh, yeah. Rob.
It just strikes me that he might know full well what net neutrality is, but he's just assuming his audience doesn't. And rather than explain it to him, he's using a big scary buzzword that's out there and that people might have heard and not understood to, you know, supplement their fears and get them around to his point of view on other things. So it's all a matter of a lack of education. You know, find out what net neutrality actually is before you go and make a decision on
it. And that's true of any issue. Find out the facts before you just listen to anybody. Don't just listen to us. Find out the facts and judge based on what you learn. All right, we're going to take some phone calls, 212-209-2900. First, I just want to very quickly look at this crazy story that came out today. Listen to this. This is unreal. In an apparent show of support for Google, several houses in Germany were pelted with eggs over the weekend. The vandals singled out houses which were blurred in the company's Street View service. Yeah, so anybody who opted to have their house blurred had a crowd of fascist Googlers come and start throwing eggs. I mean, this is scary. If you don't toe the company line and play by their rules, this crowd of people is spontaneously going to come to your house and throw eggs. I don't know. Speaking about this really rubs me the wrong way. And I'm one of the people who doesn't like to have everything displayed at all times, but it seems like people are being forced into this.
Then we should start a movement and have everybody get their houses blurred.
Yeah, I'm also not against secrecy. Yeah, this kind of thing makes me want to do that. Voltaire, yeah, then phone calls.
I feel really conflicted about this. I mean, obviously, I'm against throwing house eggs at individual houses. But like, when you have like cases where Dick Cheney has his private, he was like one of the first people to have his
public
private
figures are private. One thing. Private citizens, maybe you want your privacy. Maybe you think this is a way to gain your privacy. You should have the right. But yeah, I agree about Dick Cheney. I'll always support throwing eggs at his house if you can get close enough. Let's take some phone calls. Mike, you're going to be in charge of the buttons this week. Press a button, and hopefully it won't be who we think it is. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook.
Yes. I'd like to.
Good job, Mike. How do you do it every single time you get him? How do you? Oh, unbelievable. See, I don't do that when I press the buttons. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook.
Hi. I have an idea.
Share with us.
Okay. If the president and his cabinet and the Congress is very much in favor of all these security measures, I think Mr. Obama, his wife, his daughters, and the members of his staff, and every member of Congress and their family should go to the airports and have their bodies x-rayed and or their daughters and wives and themselves groped. And this way, they'll show the nation and the world that this is an American effort to make the world safer. But they have to start with them. So we, the regular people, at least will see our leaders who are talking about all of these things are willing to go through it themselves. Otherwise, it'll be just us. And they are going to fly in their own either private jets or very secure, beautiful airlines. I would like to see Sasha and President's wife.
We've heard this. We've heard this said before, and theoretically, it sounds like a great idea. Of course, people that high up in the government will never go to a public airport, and even if they did, you really think the TSA person groping them is really going to do an effective job groping them just for show? They'll say, "Oh, it's not so bad." It might actually work against any opposition because people will say, "Oh, look, it's okay," and they actually went and did it themselves. So it's an idea, but I don't think it's the idea that's going to make a big difference. I just want to say one thing to our two people on the phone. One of you is breathing into the phone. I'm not saying stop breathing. Just if you could maybe direct your mouth away from the phone, that would be good.
Emmanuel.
Yes, is it you, Bernie? Are you breathing?
I was breathing, but I could hold
Please.
My breath for the
yeah,
next
stop,
five,
stop
five,
that.
5 minutes if you want.
All right.
There's a historical precedent for this. Back in the early 70s, I believe, President Gerald Ford, when there was all this controversy about the swine flu vaccine, do you remember?
He got a swine flu shot. He got a shot.
He went on national television, and he got a
preempted mash or something, I remember, just to see the president get a shot in his arm. It's just, wow, that was dramatic television. Let's see if we can fit in a couple more calls. Good evening. You are on Off the Hook.
Oh, hi.
Hi.
I just wanted to comment on your...
Please turn down your radio.
Yes, I'm sorry. I'm going to do that right away. I just wanted to comment...
Yes. And try to have your radio close to the phone, too, so you don't have to walk across the room. Go ahead.
There, I turned it off. No, it's fantastic, that clip that you played, and I was starting to get a little pissed off, but as you said, it was a good thing.
It's a normal reaction, don't worry.
It's a great representation of conservative double thought, because the fairness doctrine was actually used in the beginning to basically mitigate the dissenting arguments by saying you have to present both point of views, you have to give equal time to both point of views.
And by and large, the fairness doctrine is seen as unnecessary today because access to media through the internet and various other means is a lot easier than it was, say, in the 60s when the fairness doctrine was really in force. So I don't think very many people, certainly not politicians, are pushing to have that put back into effect.
No, but now that conservative rabid dog that you played was saying that was the left's way to get their point across.
Mm-hmm.
And at the same time, you know, that reminded me of sometime this millennium, around the millennium. Remember the better dead than red philosophy? During this millennium, red became the color of the Republican Party. When did that happen?
I don't know. That's that was quite a hack right there. However that happened, because it could just, can you imagine if it was the if it was the Democrats that were red, the all kinds of slogans that we'd have today. But yeah, maybe liberals should adopt that phrase. Not that it's a very nice phrase, but better red than wait. Better dead than red. Okay, I reversed it for the Republicans just now. Better red than whatever. Thanks for the information. Let's see if we can take one more. And good evening. No? Okay, good evening. You're... No, you got to get one that's live. Try that. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook.
Yes, hello.
Hi. Yes, go ahead, quickly.
I had a question. Is this exclusively about the airport?
No, ask your question quickly, though.
Yes, my landlord wants to put in one of the intercom systems that go through your telephone. Is that any privacy issues?
Yeah, that's a bad idea. Mitch, you have a lot of those in California, don't you?
Yeah, those are really standard because it's much cheaper than putting an intercom system in.
It dials your phone number out there in the street. Everybody can hear your phone number, for one thing.
Yeah, and it can record it and then call you back.
And if somebody is able to forward your phone line someplace else, anybody can let anybody into your building just by hitting a couple of buttons on a touchtone phone. It's not the most secure system in the world. That's going to do it for us here tonight, though. We are out of time. I want to thank everybody for calling in. You can write to us, oth@2600.com. I want to thank everybody for joining us tonight. GMC, good luck with your continuing voyage across the country. And Mitch, welcome back to your home. Hopefully you'll be there for more than a week. And we'll see the rest of you next week. Same time, same place. Good night.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Yes.
When I get older, I will be stronger. They'll call me freedom, just like a waving flag. When I get older, I will be stronger. They'll call me freedom, just like a waving flag. And then it goes back, and then it goes back, and then it goes back. Oh. Born to a throne, stronger than Rome, but violent prone, poor people's own. But it's my home, all I have known, where I got grown, streets we would roam, out of the darkness, I came the farthest, among the hardest survivors, learn from these streets, it can be bleak, accept no defeat, surrender, retreat, so we struggling, fighting to eat, and we wondering, when we'll be free, so we patiently wait, for that fateful day, it's not far away. But for now we say, when I get older, I will be stronger. They'll call me freedom, just like a waving flag. And then it goes back, and then it goes back, and then it goes back. Oh. So many wars, settling scores, bringing us promises, leaving us poor. I heard them say, love is the way, love is the answer. That's what they say, but look how they treat us. Fateful day, it's not far away, but for now we say, when I get older, I will be stronger, they'll call me freedom, just like a waving flag, and then it goes back, and then it goes back, and then it goes back, and then it goes, when I get older, I will
I will be stronger, just like a waving flag. Just like a waving flag. Just like a waving flag. Flag, flag. Just like a waving flag.
Bravo, bravo, here at WBAI New York 99.5 FM. These people are off the hook, I tell ya.